go, Muniz. He's done it again. Oh, what a lovely goal. And I'm delighted for Sasha Lukic. It's his first goal for the club, and he'll love that. The Hammersmith Enders are on their feet. It's Muniz again. Oliver, 3-0 ahead.
Hello, and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. Back again, and it is the same old story as Fulham go down to Newcastle 1-0, dominated the first half, couldn't make our chances count, and unfortunately went down. I was going to say went down swinging, but we definitely weren't swinging. Here to talk it all through and have another session of group therapy, welcome to the pod, Dave. How are we going?
Yeah, well, obviously a little bit disappointed that my weekend's been ruined by yesterday's loss. And the last two games have been pretty disappointing. But I have figured out where it went all wrong. It was racking my brain last night, and then it just came to me. And I think it was when Sammy rubbed my head before the Nottingham Forest game as a sign of good luck. And ever since then, it's all fallen apart. So I don't know. I think you've got a lot to answer for here, Sammy.
Well, you notice on the live stream, I've kept you guys specifically spaced apart now. So he can't even rub your head. Skibby's in the way. Speaking of, welcome to the pod, Skibby. How are we going?
Yeah, all good. I feel like I'm, you know, just in the way of this bromance that's sort of blossoming now. So apologies, guys, but no, I'm all good. Like Dave said, weekend ruined, but you know, it's what we do. It's what we love. And I don't know why we do it to ourselves, but hey ho.
It's inexplicable, but here we are. And Sammy, how are we going tonight?
I'm going good. Mine and Skibby's bromance is very well intact. Apparently me and Dave are going through a dark period, but you know what? We can work through that. Do you know what? It's so funny. Skibby and Dave are still new, but I've done so many of these that I just forget the last things that I do. And I've completely blanked on that moment until you literally just brought it up then. So yeah, I'll take full blame for this atrocity, and happy to get into it, you know?
Yeah, well, we got to blame someone. Maybe while we talk about the game, we find someone else to blame. But at the moment, Sam, it's all your fault. Let's crack into it then. A 1-0 loss to Newcastle. Guys, before the game, we were all, I think, fairly positive without being overly positive. This was an opportunity to get at a Newcastle side that have a number of injury problems at the moment and potentially a really good opportunity to, you know, pick up from the poor performances we've had over the last couple of weeks, but it just didn't work out despite a really good start to the game. Dave, walk us through your thoughts pre-game and how you felt going into it and how it all sort of changed slowly but surely.
Yeah, I was one who felt confident pre-game. Just being back at home, we seemed to be in a different side. And I just felt like a nice day to go to the cottage. Obviously, we've got a fully fit squad. We've had a few disappointing results, and I thought there'd be a reaction. So going in, I felt, and another point was really Newcastle's injuries, wasn't it? You know, they had a lot of injuries at the back. We knew they were having to, you know, bring in players who haven't featured a lot this season, and that would present some opportunities. I felt good about it. So that makes it even more painful, really, doesn't it?
It really does. Skibby, you were in the ground as well. Just walk us through. I guess let's start with the first half. Fulham dominant and kind of looking like the better side for the majority.
Yeah, I mean, we were expecting when you saw the lineups. You know, Wilson didn't keep his place, and Lukic didn't keep his place, but Iwobi did. And you were just sort of hoping, okay, this is a lineup where we think that, you know, Willian makes things happen. So he's always a necessity in the lineup. But, you know, we really needed to light that fire under Iwobi of, you had a bit of a shocker last game. You were one of the three that had to come off after 30 minutes. Kind of, you know, you wanted your response from him. And we did get that. I thought he was very good. And it was very much a similar aspect to other games this season at home, as well as away, which was a lot of the ball, a lot of intent. We were passing the ball really well. It just didn't seem to fall for the guys in front of goal. I think Mooney's had a really good chance to sort of make it 1-0. kind of scuffed his shot at the keeper. But the same thing with Polina, had a bit of a scuff at the goal, just dribbled past the post. And you just felt like a goal was coming. But I think for everyone in the ground who was a Fulham fan knew that it's either this half or it doesn't come at all. Whereas Newcastle fans, so my cousin was actually in the Newcastle end, and because in the Putney end, it's a sort of a mixed concourse. I came to have a chat with him at half time, and he was saying, "Oh yeah, your goals are coming. It's just a matter of time. You should be about three or four up, but you know, if you keep going the way you're going, we're going to get smashed here." And I said to him, "Nope, I can see this going 1-0 Newcastle," and that's exactly how it was. And I think we played well in the first half, and I think it was really key to Willian, Kearney carrying the ball, and Iwobi carrying the ball. And I think, I know he gets a lot of stick, but Pereira, for me, it was picking out the great passes. He was sort of picking up the ball in the middle, finding an early out ball to either Willian or Iwobi, and that was hurting Newcastle, getting in behind the fullbacks. But knocking on the door, couldn't break through, and that was the story of the first half, unfortunately.
Hmm. Yeah.
Look, for me, it's difficult, isn't it? I've almost, because we watched the game in a very different context, like you guys. And I imagine at the ground, it feels very, very different. For me, because I've seen us start off so well so many times now, and then I always have this sense every first half, I'm like, I will not be comfortable no matter how good it looks like we're playing until something goes in the back of the net to like relieve my anxiety. Because I've seen us play like this quite a few times, and the longer those goals don't come, the more I can just see a conceding in like the first 10 minutes of the second half. So I was just getting progressively more and more stressed. And this ain't gonna be fun, is it? Like, it's not gonna be a jovial one today. But you know what? That's our journalistic integrity coming through, I guess.
Well, as we were sort of chatting about before we started recording, it really did feel like one of those games where, like you said, if we don't score in the first half, we're just not scoring for the rest of the game. And you rue those opportunities. That Mooney's had a great chance and just rushed it a bit. I was sitting with Dad, and his main thing was composure there. He just didn't realise quite the time and space that he actually had. He probably could have taken three touches. There was another instance where the ball got crossed into Willian, who was alone in the box. He took it down and passed it back out of the box to, I think, Kearney. And again, I don't think Willian realised he quite had the time. He could have probably taken three touches and then had a shot on goal. Polina scuffs his shot wide. We had that many corners throughout the game. Didn't take advantage of any of them. It was disappointing, but as we've all sort of agreed, you kind of know what's coming when that happens, when you're Fulham, because we've seen so many times this Fulham team either get off to a really good start and not capitalize, or just let the game slip away through sloppy mistakes, having missed a handful of chances. And this was one of those opportunities. Go on, Sammy.
I do think Newcastle actually had a very good centre-back pairing. It was annoying seeing Dan Burn captaining a borderline Champions League squad. That's an irritating concept. But I actually genuinely think they played very, very well. So it was frustrating as well to watch us actually be able to break the line and just create chances and just get shut out by these very, very large centre-backs. Because I think it really just came down to size at the end of the day. I don't think they were particularly skillful with anything that they did. But they were just really, really able to like sandwich and muscle Muniz out of like a couple of key opportunities. And then the longer they just did that, the more they just basically just created doubt, I guess, for lack of a better word. Because, yeah, we were just missing so many opportunities. It was getting, you know, it was annoying.
A lot of times when I actually thought the defense looked a little bit shaky, but again, we didn't capitalize. The first 20 minutes or so, there was so much space. There was the opportunity that I think Pereira and Muniz had where they're running forward, and Muniz got completely left alone because both defenders went to Pereira. Unfortunately, the ball just sort of bobbled around and we couldn't make the most of it. But again, it's missed opportunities and not taking the chance when it's there, and it just slipped through our fingers. Sorry, go ahead, Skibby.
No, I was going to say, yeah, Fabian Scher, I think he actually gave the ball away quite badly in a couple of situations. He looked quite shaky. And that's when I started to think, you know, because that was in front of me in the Putney end, and they were sort of shouting amongst themselves. I think it was Gordon scuffed a clearance straight to Castagno, who sort of dribbled it back into the box and pulled it back for somebody else. But they kept trying to, and Fulham just kept trying to do this. You just reminded me, Jack, that it almost like the ball came in and, you know, Willian cut it back to Kearney, but it was on his right foot and it wasn't quite as clean. And then Andreas Pereira, like, ball comes in and you thought Pereira could have a shot here, and he lays it out to Willian on the edge of the box. They kept trying to do this laying onto the edge of the box thing, which like they had enough time where they could just take a touch and have a swing at goal and see what happens. But whether that's a confidence thing with, you know, the midfield players, and they were really trying to either not confident themselves or just overly looking for Muniz or someone who they can trust more having a shot on goal. But it was a bit very bizarre that a lot of people around me were having a few nasty things to say about Pereira because he just wasn't having a shot. And then obviously when he did have one of his famous shots which went flying over the bar, even more abuse came his way. But it was strange. It was sort of reminiscent back to the days of Arsenal. Well, they're always just trying to pass it in, you know, but it was almost like we were just too scared to have a go at some points.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And at the same time, when we're laying the ball off to the edge of the box as well, we weren't actually taking a shot, even if we were getting into a half-decent position. So it really did just feel like we didn't really know what to do. And I don't know if that's down to the tactics, if it's down to Marco Silva's plan. Maybe he wants us to walk it in the back of the net. But the final ball kind of, again, wasn't there. And I'd say the last couple of games, we've just been missing that bit of quality, and maybe it's a bit of fixture congestion with three games in a week. Maybe it's the fact that we, you know, got completely done over by Nottingham last game, and it's still reverberating through the squad. But there's definitely a few issues there. Let's talk a little bit more about the team selection. Were we all happy with having Iwobi going in and Harry Wilson dropping to the bench? Dave, I'll throw to you first.
Yeah, I thought that was the team I kind of felt like he would pick before the game. I thought it made sense for Castagne to come in after Tete's performance against Nottingham Forest, where he clearly wasn't match fit. I think, you know, Willian coming back in for Wilson made sense. And Kearney, just because we're at home and to try and help create, it just all made sense. The only major surprise really was on the bench, Broya coming back into the team for which would have been Tete's place on the bench, but just to give us some more attacking options. So I kind of felt that all made a lot of sense, to be honest. And you know, it's very easy to say in hindsight he could have done things differently, but you know, I the way we started the game was on the front foot, and as you say, we were just a bit wasteful. We missed some chances. I just wanted to also make a point on that, because, you know, first kind of 20 minutes, as you said, we were all over them. We were creating chances. We were pressing up the pitch, and we were getting around their high press. And then they did. And I heard Marco Silva talk about this, and we were talking about it around where I was sitting in the stadium. They did this thing where they get the goalie to go down, because if the goalie goes down, he doesn't have to come off the pitch, does he? He can stay on the pitch, get treated, and they can have a break. And it's something Arsenal do frequently. They did it against us at the Cottage this year as well. And it is the dark arts. And I know exactly what they're doing. They're using it as an opportunity to break and change system, which they did. And after that, they kind of sat back. And that's when we started to really struggle to find ways through. And that's when you started to see Kearney, Willian and Robinson almost run out of ideas about how to break the line. Because we weren't able to break and start the move from deeper. So yeah, I think that's kind of one of the frustrations I had with that first half.
Yeah, and on that point as well, the comment that we've got on the live stream here from Colm Bolger, Boogler. When are the hierarchy going to pick up on the imaginary injuries that Newcastle have, giving them time to have a tactics chat? And it's something that Eddie Howe actually said as well in his post-match. He said, we told the keeper to go down. He said he felt a niggle. That's obviously not, well, I mean, he might have felt a slight niggle, but they said to the keeper, go down. And then he came out and said it gave us time to actually basically have a team talk and make a few adjustments. And we saw it happen multiple times that they actually did that. And it happens with every team. And I don't know if you guys saw towards the end of the game as well, because obviously the ruling now is if a player goes down and gets treated by the physio, he has to then go off for, it's meant to be a minute. It never is. Mm-hmm. But there are a few instances where the Newcastle players were going down. I think one, maybe Lewis Hall went down with cramp, and the Newcastle players were forcing him to get back up again because they knew if the physio comes on, they have to play with 10 men. And it's all just gamesmanship. But at the end of the day, it's kind of blatant cheating. Like, you know that you can slow the game down, and you know that it's not like a game like AFL or rugby where the clock stops when the ball is dead or the ball goes out of play, and it only starts again when the ball is live. So you can't actually cheat the system there. The clock is linked to the ball being in play. Unfortunately, here we saw, you know, in the first half, they probably, I was expecting maybe 8 minutes of injury time, and I think we got 4 or 5. And then I think some of that maybe got picked up in the second half, but it doesn't really equate for me. And it's frustrating seeing that happen because it's obvious it's purely tactical.
I'm a bit reluctant to criticize, though, basically cheating within the game, because the reality is that they're just utilizing a fraught system, and honestly, we probably should have done a similar thing. So I can't get annoyed at teams that do that, because you can get annoyed at, say, for example, the Italian national team. But really, it took England, say, like 15 years to just catch up to their style of cheating. Everyone just kind of gets to it at the end point. So I can't get too annoyed with them for that. Really, we can dissect what Newcastle did, but I think the reality is we just didn't make use of our chances. So,
and I mean, if there is a team who can get away with it, it's going to be Newcastle, just because of their
absolutely
injuries.
Absolutely.
Because they're like, oh, maybe he actually is injured, because they get a player injured every game, by the looks of it. So it just seems believable at this point.
I just wish that actually we would do it sometimes after we concede, try and stop this habit that we have of, you know, just kind of falling apart after we concede a goal. You know, maybe we should start doing this.
A proper breather after we concede, just to regroup. Look, it's frustrating, but unfortunately it's part of the game, and until the rules change, teams are always going to exploit it. One thing that I would like to talk about, obviously going to halftime 0-0, we all know what's coming next. But one thing we've talked about a lot in the past is Marco Silva and his substitutions. In this game, Silva decides on the 60-minute mark at 0-0. With Fulham, I'd say probably in the ascendancy, to make a triple substitution. Skibby, your thoughts on the triple sub and how it affected the game?
I'm so glad you came to me. So
this was the triple. I knew exactly what I was doing.
The triple sub against Forest was great, spot on, and I give him all the great accolades for that. Got us back into the game. I think we got hold of the ball. Fair play, take that. This game, and I mentioned it in the first half, everything that we were doing right was coming through Kearney, Willian, and loosely Andreas Pereira. So if you take off Willian, Andreas Pereira, and Kearney, we just lost all foothold in the game. We lost all composure. And I'm going to say that Newcastle centre midfield was not very good. I didn't even realise Bruno Guimaraes was on the pitch during the game. I think Longstaff was just, everyone was just 10 yards short of our midfield at that point. And then Lukic came on. Non-existent. I think he picks up a yellow card instantly. Harry Wilson, I think the only time I saw him touch the ball was for corners, and even then he wasn't beating the first man. I think we had a big series of corners towards the end of the game trying to get back into it, and he just wasn't putting a decent ball at all. And then I don't think he did anything in open play. Adama Traore, everything which I've said previously, was he's a great willing runner, love it. He's really strong on the ball, but his final ball into the box was always very hit and miss. And I think as soon as you take off Willian, who's got a great dead ball or a great cross on him, you've got Pereira, who is our set piece taker. Fair enough, maybe his corners weren't fantastic today, but he was pinging the ball out and finding space and for Iwobi to run into. And then you just didn't have any kind of hold on the midfield. The game had gone, and suddenly we had an influx of Newcastle pressure. And I think they had a goal that was then disallowed. And it was all down to the substitutions. I mean, if you're going to sub people, okay, I get it. 60-minute mark, people may need fresh legs, but don't change it all at once. I think if you're going to take off Willian, put someone else in and at least allow Kearney and Pereira to get them into the game and still have that control. Just make one or two changes of that core three. As soon as you take off the players that are making all the attacking intent for you, we just lost it. And I don't know, Lukic, Wilson, I'm going to say it, they're done. I don't think they're good enough. They have some really glowing sort of parts of games, maybe. Wilson like comes to mind for West Ham and Brighton. But two games out of 32 games in a season, not good enough. And I'm sorry, I just don't think they're the sort of players you want pushing starting 11. And I think that I don't really want to see them anywhere near starting 11 in the future, to be honest. Just, they were just so lackluster coming on that, and it wasn't even the first time for sort of the last three games to that showing at a Premier League level was just not good enough. And yeah, I'm done with them.
I'm glad I threw to you first. Should we end it all there?
No, I mean, well,
a question off the back of that, and it's a kind of a selection query, if you will. I'll pose it to you first, Dave. Sasa Lukic and Polina had strung up a pretty good partnership together, and we were talking about them being first choice. Lukic gets dropped down to the bench, and off the bench, Lukic has, across the entirety of the season, been poor. When he started, he seems to do much, much better. Do we feel like, well, firstly, do you feel like you have to start Lukic to get the best out of him? And secondly, if he's not a high enough quality, I guess, to consistently start, do you think he's a bit of a liability to have coming off the bench because he just doesn't have the impact off the bench?
Yeah, I do. I think he is, clearly his best performances have come when he started games. But the issue that everyone has seen is that when he tries to come into a game, he takes time to pick up the pace. Some players are, you know, are more naturally, you know, suited to being able to come off the bench and make an impact. He's not one of those. So, you know, it does kind of feel like a bit of a wasted bench spot when he's on there, because, you know, if he does come on, is, you know, there's no guarantee we're going to get a performance out of him. So, yeah, I do kind of agree with Skippy. I still see Lukic as our fourth choice centre midfielder. I appreciate the run he's had in the side recently, and he's done a good job when Polina was out. But no, I think, you know, going forward for the rest of the season, I'd like us to use more, you know, rotation between Reed and Kearney, depending on the opposition.
I still like a starting Sasa Lukic. It can be a little bit hit and miss, and it's dependent on game, but I'm still not fully ready to write him off. I imagine if I probably have if by the rest of the season it's still inconsistent and it's still a bit all over the shop. Yeah, I probably agree with Skibby on that one. But I think for now I think I'm still waiting for him to like properly settle, and I think he hasn't actually had an opportunity to really cement And but I do think are we all in agreement that Wilson might be done, and his we can politely say yeah, because I don't want to be mean. I won't do that.
I've always been a big defender of Harry Wilson, but his last few performances have not been up to scratch, and maybe it's because we're expecting a little more now after some of the performances we've had this year, where I think we've probably gone to a higher level than we did last season, but the consistency of last season has been lost. Mm. I think Harry Wilson worked really well when we were being more consistent, because he's a consistent performer. He hits pretty much the same level time after time. But when you're actually looking for someone to come on and step up and take to the next level, you need people like Willian. You need people like Adama to come off the bench and have a sort of physical impact, albeit his final ball wasn't great, but at least he comes off the bench and he has a presence. Harry Wilson just doesn't have that presence when he comes off the bench. He's not someone who wingbacks are fearful of when he comes on. And maybe it's because he was playing on the left, where he is, you'd think he'd be comfortable, but actually the way he plays is more suited to the right, because he likes to cut in onto his left foot, Ian Robin style. I'm looking for excuses for him here. To be honest, it wasn't good enough.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I fully agree that he's not useful off the bench. There's been some performances this year where he's come on and changed the game, in my opinion. I think of the Wolves home game. I thought he came off the bench and was excellent and won as a penalty that won the game. I've seen it as a couple of games where we lost, he came off the bench and made a real difference. You know, Aston Villa away springs to mind. So I do think when he's at it, he's useful off the bench. I agree that he's too inconsistent to start in this team when everyone's fit, because you just don't know what Harry Wilson's going to turn up at the moment. And that's really frustrating. But I'm not ready to write him off as a squad player. But he certainly needs to be more consistent and start taking the most of his opportunities when they come up.
I think unfortunately, the argument of like perfect conditions, I think, is applicable to absolutely every single player in the Premier League, because I think given the right side and all the right conditions, every player can thrive. But I think the reality kind of sent for me, at least, centers more around he's not going to get any better from this point. So I think it would be the wisest kind of move to explore a similar equivalent but younger that potentially could actually grow to be something better, and rely on that more than just essentially keeping what we have just because they're a good squad player. I'm borderline a little bit brutal on that, because I want absolutely everybody in the squad to be elevating people as opposed to being there just because they're currently useful. That's not a good enough reason for me. I think Premier League should have a standard above that.
Yeah, and I mean, to expand on Wilson, just for the game in question, he came off the bench with 30 minutes left to play against a fullback who was on a yellow card early on and had played 60 minutes. Get at him. He's a quick player. He's a bit tricky. Like, just knock the ball past him. If he takes you out, he gets a second yellow. Like, I didn't see any of that intent. It was just every time he kind of got the ball, he either lost it or passed it backwards to Jedi. And it was just no real drive from him. Like, Willian had more drive. A 36-year-old winger who, you know, people had written off before they came to Fulham. Yeah, okay, fair enough. We've seen a lot more from Willian this year, but it just shows his confidence level, I think, of just not having that drive to take on your man. I mean, go at him. If he's got your number and he tackles you, fair enough. We know that early on, then you can start looking other ways. But I mean, as soon as he gets that ball, he should be confident enough to sort of want to make a play to tie the game or win the game at this point, that, you know, just get at him, see what happens. And you just didn't see that. And for me, that was just a waste of a sub. I'd rather have, I don't know, Bobby Decord over Reed or someone else just have a go. But he just didn't seem to want it. I don't know if he was just scared of making a mistake, but
I think that's a big thing with Harry. I think he genuinely does fear making a mistake. He's not the shithousery, I'm just going to throw everything at the wall kind of guy. I think Saša Lukić actually does have a bit of that. I think he can instigate and cause some shithousery, which is why I still actually like him and I still have got like some faith in them, because I think he can actually annoy people way more so than Harrison Reed's pretty annoying. I was going to compare that. That's not fair, but definitely way more so than Wilson does. I would really like to sit down at a pub with Harry Wilson, get a drink with him, learn his life story. But he's never been a malicious kind of guy. He's never had a kill instinct. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But I mean, you need fire, don't you? Especially if you're coming off as like an impact player.
And then, I mean, Lukic came off the bench, picked up a yellow instantly.
Yeah,
I think that was it. That's all he did.
Yeah, too much. Like,
I would rather he get his foot. Yeah. Exactly. But in this game where you saw that we had that Newcastle had no hold on the midfield, like he just needed to get his foot on the ball, use his strength, and just, you know, hold up the ball, use it, and just in a smart way, give it to Iwobi. I think there was a point where Iwobi dropped into centre mid. I think Polina came off, didn't he? I think, and then Iwobi came into centre mid at that point. But yeah, and Iwobi was just carrying the ball, and you just kind of wanted someone like that. Just get your foot on it, drive at them, because as soon as you drive at them, they seem to really back off. And we saw that in the first half, but we just lost all intensity in that second half as soon as we made those subs. And for me, that's where Marco Silva dropped the ball. And the reason I'm looking at a screen which says 1-0 Newcastle is because of those substitutions.
I think it's a major contributor. Obviously, not taking our chances in the first half. If we had taken a couple of those, it might be saying 1-1 or 2-1. But 100%, the changes just sucks the life out of Fulham in this game. Yeah. And it wasn't long after that we went 1-0 down. Now, the goal was overturned. Guys, in the stadium, I'm sure it was probably not picked up, because I didn't even notice it on watching it on the TV first time round. It was only until it got replayed over and over again. I assume you've all had a chance to have a look at it. Quick word on that as a foul. The ball does appear to have gone quite clearly over Bassi's head, but VAR also said they were checking to see if the shove meant that Bassi couldn't then defend the shot on goal. Your thoughts on if that goal should have stood, and I guess if you would have been happy for that to be, not happy, but you would have accepted that being chalked off if it was the other way around. Anyway.
So, I mean, it is a funny one. I think, you know, Bassi, there was contact with Bassi, wasn't there, as the balls come in?
He makes a lot of contact, yeah.
Yeah, so for that reason, I think I can see why they've looked at it, and I can see why they've disallowed it, because ultimately the player's been pushed over, and if he hadn't, he'd have been in a better position to defend the shot. So it in some ways it feels a little soft, because it wasn't part of the primary action that led to the goal. It kind of happened around it, but and maybe I would be frustrated if it was that happened the other way around, probably. But you know, I can kind of see why they've looked at it and why they've disallowed it. And, you know, I don't think there's loads of arguments from Newcastle. I think Eddie Howe thinks it should have stood, but I haven't heard too much commentary of people saying it was a terrible decision. So yeah, that's probably where I stand on it.
I'm not really a genius tactician in any capacity. I'm not sure if that ever came
really
across. Yeah, I know. I just saw it as he clatters Bassi in the back of the head and basically clears way for himself. So, but I was convinced that they were just going to allow it, and they were just going to be like, "Fuck you, Bassi, just take it, like get a helmet," you know. So yeah. I was actually amazed that it actually went in our favor, because I was really just expecting it to turn out the other way. I don't know the full technical ins and outs. I just thought he was it was brutish. It was brutish behavior. But yeah, of course, if it went the other way, I'd have a completely different argument, because yeah, don't be soft. Yeah.
I mean, contrary to Jack's comment, I actually did see it live. I just saw Bassi just get sent into the goal, and I was like, well, that's not going to stand. But I think I'm always a firm believer across the board, which is if it's a foul in the center circle, it's a foul anywhere on the pitch, mm-hmm. regardless yeah. of the situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I hate this where it's just like, oh, well, you know, it wasn't quite to be, you know, given as a penalty. It wasn't, you know, as strong a tackle. But if it happens in the center circle and it's a foul, it's a foul. I mean, let's just go with that. And I just quickly had a look now because I hadn't actually rewatched it back. I hadn't gone through that trauma just yet. But yeah, it's a foul. Anywhere else on the field, it's a foul. So why shouldn't it be ruled out? And I think for me, if that does go against us, that, you know, say Muniz flattened someone and Willian packed an obviously a back post, I'm just going to be like, well, Muniz, you shouldn't have done that because you're an idiot. Mm. And yeah. I think that's what Newcastle fans have got to say. Like, Dan Byrne, idiot. You didn't have to go that hard into Bassey if it was going over his head. But hey ho. I mean, rightly ruled out. But then for me, that's where the alarm bells are ringing. Like, we've dominated a game. We've gone 1-0 yeah. down against the run of play. That we're really bloody lucky that it's been chalked off because Dan Byrne's an idiot. But that's where you've got to now start, right, we need to buck our ideas up and find out how to sort of beat this Newcastle team that's now coming back into the game. And then very shortly after, what happens? Very similar goal.
But it's a similar goal, but it's also a similar theme for Fulham, isn't it? You know, yeah. we've mentioned it. I know you guys talked about it on the last pod. It's just so frustrating that time and time again, when we concede, it's often followed by a second goal, but for the opposition, that just we just don't seem to be able to compose ourselves in those moments. Sort of saying earlier, maybe we need to, you know, start using some of these dart arts and getting Leno to go down after we concede, just so we can regroup and figure out how we're going to reapproach the game, because it's just happened way too many times for it to be a coincidence. There's an issue there. And it's not being resolved. And it was so predictable, wasn't it, after that there was only going to be one winner in that game.
Well, yeah, it's like you said, we have this issue conceding two goals in very quick succession. For us in this game, one of them was chalked out, but we still conceded. And then I think it's about 6 minutes later, we concede again. And look, I don't know if there's a huge amount we can do better with this goal. It just seems like we're a bit at sea. Like, I don't think there's anyone in particular to blame. Everyone just sort of standing still like a bit of a statue at some points. And Guimarães has like a free run at the ball. When he strikes it, you kind of know that he's going to score. Anyone think that Leno possibly could have done a little better there? It's not exactly in the corner.
Nah.
No,
just no. I mean, he's got a free run at goal. He's going to smash it as hard as he can. Leno has maybe 6-7 bodies in front of him at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Gordon. Really.
Anthony Gordon is completely blocking his view, despite being onside. He's behind Anthony Gordon, so he can't really see what's going on. The only reason I mention it is because on Twitter, a lot of people piping up saying Leno's making too many mistakes and being too inconsistent. And I personally didn't think this one was much of an issue. To be honest, if anything, the first one's more of an issue, getting beaten at your near post like that.
Yeah.
And a very large gap there at the near post that he left open. Fortunately, didn't stand. But I think he actually made a couple of good saves throughout the game and came off his line a few times. So there was one point where Isak was thrown on goal and he came off his line very quickly to close that down. I think he had a pretty good game in general.
Oh, was that the bit with Tosin?
Yes,
where I could see the ball going through both of them and see it run through. I was like, oh my god! But fantastic goalkeeping. But I mean, for the goal, horrible clearance from Jedi. Like, he literally just tapped it to the center circle. The penalty spot. Sorry, and you're thinking if you're dropping the ball there, anything can happen. And I think it's more on Robinson than Leno for sure. And then, like you said, Robinson was playing Gordon onside in front of the goalkeeper. Well, I don't know what he was doing standing there, but
a rare mistake. A goal to concede, absolutely. And look, not a huge number of chances towards the end of the game for Fulham to actually get back into it. We did push forward, but didn't really have much joy. Broya came on, a little bit of pace about him, which looked a little bit exciting, but nothing really came from it. Raul Jimenez looked like the Raul Jimenez from the very start of the season again, unfortunately. And the 99th minute Rabona definitely had a few people up in arms on Twitter. I don't know if you guys had a decent view of that. Does Jimenez try and overdo things, do we think, or does he just not have a left foot?
I think he's trying to stand out by doing, you know, stuff like that. I think he's trying to be a bit flash. And there's just a time and a place, isn't there? And it's not in the 99th minute when you're 1-0 down. And don't get me wrong, if it comes off, you know, it's majestic. But I don't think Marco Silva will be particularly pleased at doing that. However, I did think we got a corner out of it, so maybe it shouldn't be too critical. Yeah, but I can see why it frustrates people, basically. And it wasn't the first flick he did. You know, it was about a few minutes before that he tried a flick that didn't come off in the build-up
or something as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of when you're not winning, and you know, when you're losing a game, you're trying to get back into it. That's one way of really frustrating the fans. So you know,
it is objectively really, really hard though, because when you're a player like Jimenez, you have to believe that you can do that. So he's either destined to be a genius or an idiot. But in all cases, he has to try, because if he doesn't try, then the pitchforks really come out. So I'll always go a little bit easy on him, because it's kind of a frustrating style that he has. When it works, it's incredible, and I want to set fireworks off in the street. But I don't want him to stop. If Raul, if you're listening, I don't want you to stop, but just pace, you know, just pace yourself.
But other than that, you're right. We didn't create too much at the end. We were really wasteful when we got the ball out wide, weren't we? Skibby mentioned it earlier with Traore. I actually thought Traore had a bit of an impact when he came on, and he was breaking the lines and, you know, causing them some issues, which was pleasing to see. But, of course, the final ball was terrible, you know, overhit crosses or not beating the first man. And I have to be equally critical on the other side. I thought Robinson got into some good positions down the left towards the end, and his final ball was pretty poor. You know, he got into the box a few times to try and whip it across, and just managed to pick out their defender every time. So, yeah, it was happening at both sides, and that was that's how the game. I think it would have gone on another 20 minutes. We wouldn't have scored. It was one of those games.
Yep, very, very disappointing. Let's have a quick look at some of the stats from the game. And as I said before the podcast, the stats basically haven't changed across the last three games, despite us picking up 1 point. 67% possession for Fulham, 14 shots on shots to Newcastle's 12. Fulham with just 4 of those on target, Newcastle 5 on target. 588 passes to Newcastle's 296, 14 corners to Newcastle's 3, and 10 fouls to Newcastle's 13. A quick look at the league table as it stands. Fulham remain in 13th. Maybe slightly fortunate. The teams above us actually all didn't have good results on the weekend. Bournemouth currently 2 points ahead of us, despite having a game in hand. And Wolves 3 points ahead with a game in hand as well. We're still within touching distance of the top half, although it's starting to pull away from us. We really do need to start picking up some results. But below us, Crystal Palace and Everton still 9 and 10 points adrift. Brentford 10 points adrift of us as well. And flirting with relegation, which I quite enjoy. It's going to be there's going to be some key games coming towards the end of the season. Fulham to play Brentford, and also Fulham playing Luton on the last day of the season. There's going to be a lot on the line in those games, and hopefully we can get the Fulham side we know and love back for those games. A bit of a question here around how we feel. Just for those on the live stream, I'm showing Fulham's current top scorers in the league this season so far. Muniz with 8, BDR with 6, Jimenez and Iwobi both have 5, Willian Polina with 4, and Harry Wilson with 3. Now, a lot of people on Twitter, at least, are starting to maybe question Rodrigo Muniz as a potential starting striker for us next season. We've talked about it a fair bit and sort of said we need to see how he goes towards the end of the season, how he goes through bare patches, and he's in one at the moment, I would say. But are we still seeing enough from Muniz to at least see him be either the first or second striker next season? Skibby, I'll throw you first.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of great qualities from him, even when it's not going his way. He's got a great first touch, and I think his hold-up play is really good. So I think there was even an element with a long ball up from Leno, and he just chested the ball down to Willian. And that, for me, is just not... I mean, I'm not saying just that's enough, but he's showing glimpses of a striker that can play the way that we have been playing previously with a certain strong number nine, which, you know, brings other people into play, allows us to get down the pitch much quicker. You know, his flick-ons from sort of long balls works for me, I think. And it's been quite surprising in the last sort of, not so much the Newcastle game, but especially against sort of Forest and Sheffield United, where we didn't really try and attack that avenue, which is something I guess I questioned the tactics that Marco had instructed them to just sort of get the ball out wide and go for crosses more than sort of play it up to Muniz and let him fight for it, which he's been doing quite successfully in other games. But he is showing that he can hold his own against some of the top sort of centre backs in the league. He can, you know, bring other people into play, which I think is very key. And he's showing that element. And it'll be interesting to see how he reacts, because he doesn't seem that sort of player which will sort of back down. I think the words that are coming out of the training ground and from Marco and the team are he's a hard worker and he works hard in the training ground. So I don't think it's going to impact him, but it'll be interesting to see if he can push on now and sort of go to West Ham in the next week or so and sort of keep sort of trying to sort of take his chances. And not let, you know, the sort of miss against Newcastle get into him, or the fact that he hasn't scored in two games sort of get onto his mind. I think that's where we're going to see that absolute certainty of he is strong enough mentally. We know he's strong enough physically, but is he strong enough mentally to be that man to lead our line? But personally, I am seeing enough from him that he's just not getting those chances. And I think that's more down to the teammates around him than his actual ability itself.
He's had a really, really long time as well to actually get to this point. I think if he had any doubt, he's already gone through it for like the past two seasons. I think he's really, really come into his own. He's not Carlos Vinicius for me. Carlos Vinicius always felt lucky, whereas he feels calculated. He feels like he's actually playing the game that he actually wants to play and creating really good chances. If he's not starting striker, he's definitely backup for me. He's still so young, so to just write him off at 22 just feels egregious at best. I think we should definitely try to get an out-and-out star striker to compete with him and push him as well. But he's nowhere near done for me. I think he's got a lot of legs.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't forget either. He's been playing with an injury, you know, the last few games. And, you know, I don't think it was his best game yesterday. I think that, you know, as we mentioned earlier, the chance he missed, he could have done better. There's a little bit in the second half, I remember, you know, a couple of times he lost the ball and I thought, no, it's just not quite going for him today. And I wasn't really surprised that he was given a rest when he did. But as Skibby said, his hold-up play throughout, you know, it's not just about scoring goals, is it? It's about how he contributes to the build-up play and the attack, and he did that really well. So I think it's premature, really, for anyone to be suggesting that he's, you know, that it's all falling apart now and, you know, he's not the man for Fulham. I certainly see him as being, if not our starting striker next year, then alongside, you know, as Sammy said, another striker that we bring in competing for that number nine position.
Yeah, I think, as we all know, Twitter is full of overreactors who love to overreact post-game. So I definitely agree he's not done. There's no question about that. Anyone who, and I did see someone compare him to Collins John, who burst onto the scene, scored 11 goals from only 15 starts in the season. And then next season did basically nothing. And I think we were talking about Collins John earlier this season with the podcast as well. And it's an interesting comparison. I do think times have changed since then. I think Muniz probably has a better support system around him than Collins John did, and has better players around him than Collins John did as well. That Fulham side, when Collins John was playing, was probably not the strongest Fulham side we've had in the Premier League era. I'd not 100% sold on him as the first striker next season, but as a backup striker, geez, he's perfect for it because he comes on and is a menace. And I would be fine seeing him start most games based on the fact that he can score goals and he does make a nuisance of himself. So I don't think there's any doubt that he is a long-term option for us and still a bit of a rough diamond, but he'll get there for sure. Let's have a quick look at the next game. Now, we won't preview this because we will talk about this in the preview pod on Wednesday, but game against West Ham coming up at the London Stadium. It's a Sunday game. West Ham obviously playing in the Europa League this week as well. How are we feeling going into this one? Skibby, I'll throw to you first on this. West Ham, maybe not in the best run of form at the moment, but not an easy game.
No, and I think I would say our form basically speaks for itself. But I think the fact that they're playing Leverkusen away on the Thursday, then home to us on a Sunday, and then again they've got the home tie on the Thursday after, or Wednesday, I can't remember which, but they haven't got the squad depth to handle three games like that. So it is a great opportunity for us, but we're so awful away, so I don't know what to expect. But that's the inkling of hope that I have, is that West Ham are going to be shattered, because Leverkusen is not an easy game. One of the highest performing teams in Europe, I think.
Yeah, they're so crushing it. Absolutely.
So I think for me, if they're gonna have a really tough game, and then come against a fully rested Fulham team, it's not an easy ask for them. But again, away Fulham is a completely different Fulham to what we're used to. So I can't merely comment on what Fulham's going to turn up.
Dave, I've just pulled up West Ham's recent form here. It's an interesting look at their form. A 5-0 win against Freiburg into a 1-1 draw with Villa. That 3-4 loss against Newcastle, where they were 3-1 up and dropped the bundle, into a 1-1 draw with Spurs and a 2-1 win against Wolves. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, look, West Ham are a very competitive side. And, you know, they play a brand of football that tends to get them results. I think that Skibby's right. I think the European ties will be a distraction for them. And, you know, coming back from Leverkusen midweek, it seems tend to struggle when they're playing in Europe midweek, and then have to play Premier League at the weekend. So I think that if we can, you know, start strong, start fast, and get ahead, then I think definitely there's an opportunity there to get a result. You know, there's definitely an opportunity here. I completely agree with that. But then again, the other factor is as well, we absolutely embarrassed them really in the home game, and they might have a bit between their teeth to try and put that right. So it's a really hard one to call, isn't it? But I do think we should go there, and if we can start strong and get ahead, I don't see any reason why we can't get a result.
I thought what you were going to say is that there's been an opportunity for us to win a game in the last three games, and we've screwed all those up. So that means nothing. Sammy, your thoughts?
I just kind of don't really want to do it, you know? I particularly don't want to go away. Steve Reynolds actually just brought up a really, really interesting point on the live stream. 1 point out of 9 points since Boa left. Like, that's quite a lot. That's
a conspiracy theory, is what that is.
I don't. Yeah, but like, I mean, tin hats out. You know, I just didn't necessarily think about that at all. Maybe we've lost an oracle of sorts. Maybe Silva's completely. Maybe he's an inconsolable wreck, and he just thought the breakup was going to be civil, and now he's reeling. Maybe there's a lot more going on there. I don't know.
I think you're just looking to shift the blame from yourself for the recent losses to Boa.
No, again, I completely forgot that was part of the narrative. It's all very fitting. Honestly, I just, do you know what's annoying though? I feel that we could actually get a pretty good result. Just kind of out of nowhere, it feels like one of those. It feels like we, because we're good at upsets at the moment, and I think everyone will probably like write us off. But I'm just going to be annoyed and stressed and probably quite cynical until it happens. And then I will be very jovial and very positive on the next pod. But until then, it just feels... I'm just not looking forward to it. Yeah.
Well, it's an opportunity there. We'll have to wait and see what happens, but we will cover it in more depth in a preview pod coming up this week. So, guys, I think we can put this one to rest now and finally stop talking about it. We've said that for the last 3 weeks in a row. It's been the same old story, Fulham throwing away good opportunities. Let's hope that when we do go to West Ham this weekend, we take advantage of West Ham playing in Europe and hopefully come away with 3 points and get our season back on track. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us, guys. Dave, thanks for joining in.
Cheers. Thanks very much. And there'll be no head rubbing today or any further games in future, because we know what that did. And we'll have to find a new way of wishing the team luck.
Yeah, a less physical one going forward, I think. Skibby, thanks for joining us tonight, mate.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, hopefully a more positive pod going forward.
Fingers crossed. And Sammy, thank you very much for joining.
Thanks for having me. I will rub no one. I will touch nothing. I will go to sleep with gloves on. And I will behave. I will behave until further notice. And if that does work, and I'm not allowed to touch anyone ever, if West Ham get put to the sword, I don't really know where I go from there, because I might need to do that at some point, but we'll see. We'll see. I can make that sacrifice.
Fine with me. For all those who are following along live, the Fulham women's team are about to kick off at Craven Cottage. That game's being streamed live on the Fulham YouTube. Do follow along. It's a big game for Fulham women's, looking to hopefully push for promotion, even though it's maybe slightly out of reach now, but should be a really good game against Dartford. Thank you everyone again for joining us, and as always, come on you Whites.